98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Sold. Get the price for your home at 72sold.com.
Maloney leaves the control room of the Auction Community Studios, walks into Paul's stall with a list of questions she's got based on facts of sports that she's confident you either need to know more about or don't know at all and need to find out. It's the Rush Hour Reboot. Maloney, go.
So Kyler Murray has led the Cardinals to a 2-0 start this season, and yesterday ESPN debated whether or not the Cardinals' second-year quarterback is already a top-10 player.
Hell no! And guys, and hey, listen, I understand, man, we get all excited, and the door's been open for Kyler, right? We talk about his talent all the time.
He went on to compare Kyler's stats so far this season to the stats Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson had through two games in their second season, which led ESPN's Ryan Clark to this conclusion.
Those ain't really top 10 quarterback stats. Those are, you have a lot of talent, Arizona really sucks most of the time, you're 2-0, and you've played well. That ain't kick the door down stats. And it is not an indictment on Kyler Murray. I think he's going to be really good and in the MVP conversation one day. This ain't the day.
I played that second part just for you, Wolf.
He is so good, by the way.
What is it like being the color analyst for a team who sucks most of the time?
Are you dogging? No,
oh, look at that. Well done, Maloney.
You did that to me right there. I mean, that's just
out of anywhere
Ryan
to
Clark,
take this topic
just
and
stop
she sticks it.
It to you. I mean, honestly, I know you can look at it. The last couple seasons have been rough. There's no doubt about it, all right? But before that, it was the Bruce Arians area, and there was a lot of winning that was going on there, too.
There was a lot of winning early. It started to fizzle pretty fast.
Hey, 5 years over 50 wins, baby. That's all I'm talking about. Two NFL Executive of the Year awards, by the way, in those 5 years. A lot of good stuff.
Did they get
was
any special team coaching awards during those 5 years?
Ryan Clark, the best thing about that is Kyler Murray does not care. He doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what anyone thinks. He doesn't care if he is in the top 10 or isn't. He's going to go about his business exactly the same way, and that's the best thing about that.
When do you think Kyler will be a top 10 player in the NFL?
Top 10? Why do you do this to me, Mal? I mean, we've got to have this top 10 prediction. Is that what we've got to have?
Can have the franchise quarterback prediction if you'd rather.
Please, let's just all sit back and watch what Kyler Murray is doing right now, because it is good.
He is, first of all, Wolf's dodging. Secondly, he is a franchise quarterback. He is not a top 10 player. I mean, to be a top 10 player, this is gonna be crazy math. You have to be better than every player other than nine of them. It's just not true yet. Aaron Donald, Pat Mahomes, Russell Wilson, D-Hop, Julio Jones, Chandler Jones, Michael Thomas, George Kittle, Stephon Gilmore, Christian McCaffrey, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, Travis Kelce, Aaron Rodgers. Right? That's more than 10. He's not better than those guys as of yet. Will he be? When will he be? Let's talk after year three.
Did you have Aaron Donald in there?
I had him at number one.
Okay, there you go.
The Cardinals are gearing up to face the Lions on Sunday at State Farm Stadium. So what does the Cards' Week 3 opponent think about Kyler?
He can really get to top-end acceleration extremely quick, and I think that's what catches a lot of people by surprise. You know, he can just burst and explode, and within two steps, he's at full speed, and then he can stop within a step or two. And I think some of that for quarterback position, you know, you're not necessarily used to it. It's almost like trying to tackle a punt returner.
What kind of performance do you think Kyler will have on Sunday?
The expectation for Kyler Murray is, of course, he's going to go out and he's going to play well, and the Arizona Cardinals are going to win. That's his expectation. And that's the thing I love about that. Everyone knows it's his expectation. And if you're not doing your job, if you're not pulling your weight, what's your problem? I love this, because this expectation, this understated do your job mentality that he has is exactly what this team needs.
I think he'll do great this weekend when you grade the film. I think his numbers will be above average. And the reason why is I think this is the Kenyon Drake game. I think with the way that the football team and the 49ers play, it was all about the horizontal passing game, get the ball out, move as quickly as you can. I think this is the game where it's going to be a lot more Kenyon Drake and then a little bit more play action down the field after you soften it. Instead of running in the second half, I think you're going to see a lot more rushing plays in the first half. Mm. And therefore, Kyler's numbers will be slightly down.
The Lions defensive coordinator also had some comments on the Cardinals' offense yesterday.
You know, the one thing I liked about coaching in the league is you didn't have to worry about playing Texas Tech. Well, we're playing them. So we got to be good. You got to be sound and all that stuff. And then not to mention the tempo.
RC Anderson Ford poll question is up now at ArizonaSports.com, and it asks, who of these four players will make the biggest impact on the Cardinals' offense this season? Andy Isabella, Jerron Brown, Chase Edmonds, or Dan Arnold?
Chase Edmonds.
Ooh, man, that is good right there. Boy, I'll tell you what I've seen from Andy Isabella, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you right now, that will totally change the dynamic. I bring a new element to this offense that will terrify defensive coordinators. You tell me that run by that he's put on tape against Washington, and the fact you can line him up in the slot and he'll run a slant route and catch the ball with his hands for 13 yards. Yeah, Andy Isabella. The impact he could have on this offense would be massive. Isn't that right, Henry Ruggs III?
Not enough sample size yet after all of last year for me to put him over Chase Edmonds yet.
So 45% say Chase Edmonds, 29% Andy Isabella, 23% Dan Arnold, and 3% Jerron Brown.
The guy they're missing the most right now is Max Williams.
The fate of the Pac-12 football season will be decided today. The conference presidents and chancellors will meet today and are expected to vote on whether or not the Pac-12 will play a football season this fall. ASU head coach Herm Edwards joined you guys on Monday to discuss.
I think Thursday we'll all know what's going on, but we're excited that the way it's moving right now. We just have to wait for the people that make those decisions to make the decision. So I'm pretty sure eventually we're going to get to play.
What do you think happens today?
I think the Pac-12 is going to vote to actually proceed with the football season as soon as possible. And at the same time, as soon as I say that, I think we're probably not going to see it until Halloween.
I think it's going to be after that. I think that they're not going to play, and I think they're going to vote to play, but they're not going to start until November. And what's amazing to me about all this is not that the Pac-12 is embarrassing itself. I'm used to it. It's the fact that they still haven't advanced to the point that they even know they're embarrassing themselves. How many people that are high up that are wearing the emperor's clothes that actually think they're doing a good job is really scary. There is no group of leadership more lost in their own head than the Pac-12.
Miami got a superstar performance from Tyler Hero as his 37-point night led the Heat to a 112-109 win over the Celtics in Game 4. Wolf, it's your new adoptive playoff team, right?
There's no doubt about it, yes.
I love
watching Tyler Hero play because of how he's locked in his intensity level. But more than that, it's the Miami Heat. They're my new adopted team, yes.
I look at this. And I'm focused on how many teams got rid of Jimmy Butler and why. Because he works too hard. Because you don't like him because he embarrasses you. You don't like the fact that he gets angry because you're not working hard. Every team that got rid of Jimmy Butler is soft. That's it. And now he's found a home in Miami. Why? Because Pat Riley is hard. Because Eric Spoelstra is hard. And who are the players that they recruit slash draft slash work out? Players that accept working hard. And now Jimmy Butler is surrounded by guys that work hard. And guess where they are? One game away from the NBA Finals with the least amount of talent from about the top eight teams in the NBA.
When you hear people talking about how defense generates offense, think of the Miami Heat. This isn't a motto with them. This is life. This is their culture. And I know you could say that about Boston to some degree and Brad Stevens as well, but Miami has just done it better. They're so stinking tough. And the face of that is Jimmy Butler.
Coming up next, what question about the Cardinals could elicit this response?
Hell no!
That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Kyler Murray, quarterback Arizona Cardinals. The person that was declared by Paul Calvisi that will change the entire game of football.
Or he did.
Future of football.
He did. Paulie was all over that.
Even before Kyler Murray measured in at 5'9.5". Don't believe the Kyler. Don't
it's 5'10".
Every bit of 5'10". Believe me, I know.
Paul,
that's right, Paul.
How tall are you, Paul?
Just stop it.
Oh, I see.
Just
I
stop
see.
It, okay?
Paul, let's measure your hands.
Just all you need to know is I was nose to nose with Barry Sanders. Is that good enough for you?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So this is now, after all that's been done in two games, the hype train is getting larger and larger. There's more and more cars attached to the hype train engine behind both the Cardinals and Kyler Murray. And one man, Ryan Clark, stands on the tracks and says, stop this train. On whether or not Kyler Murray is a top 10 player in the NFL.
Hell no. And guys, and hey, listen, I understand, man. We get all excited and the door's been open for Kyler, right? We talk about his talent all the time. Cliff Kingsbury steps up and drafts him number one overall in the perfect system.
Left.
But I want y'all to think about something. He comes into this year and we're saying Kyler Murray is going to be in the MVP conversation. And through two games, we are all excited about what Kyler Murray has done, right? 516 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions, three touchdown runs, though, and a little bit over 100 yards.
And there's much more of that, I imagine, as he went on one of those, you know, somebody's got to fill the shoes of Skip Bayless and when Stephen A. has the day off. So I get it over there. And look, there's two ways to look at it. You can look at it the way Dan Orlovsky does, and he considers Kyler a top five quarterback when it comes to game planning against the degree of difficulty if you're a D coordinator. So there's that way of looking at it. Or you can just look at it where he is in the overall pantheon of players and the power pole players. I get it. What I think they need to realize is that when Kyler comes out of both games and says, quote, we're just scratching the surface, when Kyler and basically everyone else in offense says, we left a lot out there, and now you're going against the next three opponents that you're going to play with a defensive front from the Lions that has two sacks in two games. This ain't the Niners' defensive front when healthy. This isn't even Washington's defensive front with five first-round picks. You're talking about the Lions and Carolina and the stinking Jets. So I think the national media needs to prepare themselves to call an audible 3 weeks to a month from now when the numbers might dictate a little differently than having that hot take from Ryan Clark right there.
You know, you know how I feel about this. I don't care if he's in the top 10. And the best thing about it is Kyler Murray doesn't care if he's in the top 10 or not. This is the expectation for Kyler Murray. It's one of the reasons why he said, hey, listen, you know what? I've had some success before. I'm accustomed to this. I'm used to this. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he basically said. That's the best trend the Arizona Cardinals have going forward. A young quarterback that is developing into a franchise quarterback that doesn't care what you say, good or bad, about him. Doesn't care. He's got his own level of expectation, and that's what matters.
I mean, nobody needs to stay on me about it. It's not my first time dealing with success in my lifetime. You know, this is part of the game. You know, we work hard in the offseason. We work hard to practice to win. We expect to win. I mean, I think everybody should expect to win. So, you know, when you do, you shouldn't be surprised by it. You know, I'm not a guy that gets too high, gets too low. I am who I am. I, you know, remain the same no matter what. But like I said, I mean, this isn't the first time dealing with success. For me personally, I mean, I've done nothing. As a team, I feel like we've done nothing. So, you know, we just got to really, you know, continue to work.
But you know what? If he did care, that's not a bad thing to me.
Yeah, it is. What, you're going to care what some national analyst says about it? Just go play. Do your job.
If he looks around and he says, now, wait a minute. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson are considered this tier one, and before the season began, I'm tier three. If he cared about that and that meant he's going to compete that much harder, that's fine with me. Wherever he finds the motivation, wherever he finds that inner drive, whether it's trying to get the dub as he flashed the camera coming off the field against the Niners, whether it's trying to compete with the other quarterbacks, the young quarterbacks who are MVP quarterbacks, trying to win his own MVP, if that's his motivation, if he cares about that, doesn't matter to me. As long as he's continuing to maximize his potential, he can find the motivation anywhere he wants.
For me, the only person I've ever seen be able to do that is Michael Jordan. And how dumb is it to say I don't like it, but it's Michael Jordan. But that's it. Almost everybody that allows themselves to be motivated by, oh, my GM likes Tony Kukoc, I'm now vote motivated to blow him up in the Olympics. Oh, my, this writer doesn't think I'm as good as this player. Well, now I'm going up against him. I'm going to light him up. So that writer, you know, he did it every game. Michael Jordan found an outside reason to be motivated, which still doesn't make sense to me, but it worked every single time.
No.
Other than that, most players who would say, somebody doesn't think I'm this, so I'm going to prove to that person I am, you run out of those people at some point. If it's just about, I love to compete and I hate losing with such a deep-rooted passion that I have to win, I have to win. Ty Cobb, the biggest jerk to ever play sports, once beat up his roommate because in those days, Wolf, you'll love this, in those days, you slept four roommates to a room with two in each bed. So grown men slept together every road trip. And Ty Cobb beat up his roommate because his roommate went into bed before he did. And Ty Cobb said, you don't understand. I have to be first. Just getting into bed. Okay.
Michael Jordan didn't need any more internal motivation. He didn't. He was,
so he looked for it externally because he already had too much internally?
He was internally motivated. It was a constant state of being internally motivated. He didn't need any external motivation. Did he use it? Yes, he did. But it was because he was already so internally motivated. Mm. That's exactly what Kyler Murray is to me. This is a guy that is internally motivated. It doesn't care what you think. Here's the expectation. And by the way, I'm going to look at my teammates and hope you have the same expectation of playing well and winning games.
But if the Cardinals go into Week 7 against Seattle and Russell Wilson is still playing to this level and Kyler Murray says to himself, okay, I'm going to try and be better than Russell Wilson, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with him going into those games and saying, hey, I want these national analysts to be talking about me as the better quarterback who had the better game than this elite marquee guy.
Man, I hope that's not the case. I hope he just remains internally motivated, the person that he is. I'm going to just be the best that I can be and let the chips fall where they may. I hope that's the way that he continues.
Isn't that a form of internal motivation, though?
What do you mean?
Looking around at the other guys and saying, you know what?
The way you phrased it,
they drive me. The scoreboard drives me. And also the player rankings drive me. All of these things I think you can construe as internal motivation.
I want him to go 1-0. Be motivated to go 1-0. To be motivated to be better than you were yesterday.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Think about the tweets. 1-0. He tweeted it out again. After they're 2-0. He tweeted out 1-0.
He will never tackle Patrick Mahomes. He will never tackle. He'll never be one-on-one in the hole with Russell Wilson. It's him versus the defense. Go win.
It's exactly.
Well, I'm not expecting him to verbalize it. He knows better than putting it out there for the media to actually name names. He'll never do that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean internally it doesn't provide motivation. That's my point.
When you go back and you look at this kid and the things he's accomplished in his life, I mean, Paul, you have the list in front of you. You have how many high school championships?
Three.
You go back and look at what this kid has accomplished in his life. You don't just get that by happenstance.
How many
losses
in big school?
You are an internally motivated dude.
I mean, think about it. How many losses in his high school career? Zero, 0.0.
I love that. That's my favorite stat of all time.
Coming up next, what will Wolf have his eyes on? What will the defense have their eyes on when Matthew Stafford's under center? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Here's how this works. On Wednesdays, Ron Wolfley takes a look and gives you a sneak preview of what it's going to be like when he is high above at State Farm Stadium, looking down on the field, and what he thinks the opponent's defense is going to try to do, and how important it is for the Cardinals' offense to do the opposite or what they need to succeed at. Thursdays, we flip it. So now, it's the Lions. It's Matthew Stafford. It's the Cardinals. It's Jordan Hicks. And it's Vance Joseph. And it's what will Wolf watch?
What will Wolf watch? Patrick Peterson versus Kenny Golladay.
Yeah, I'm going to go old school, Basinonians. Listen, the game of football is a team sport. Of this, there is no dispute, of course. One player's job is predicated on another player doing his job and the guy that lines up next to him doing his job, etc., etc. But within each play, there are rages a battle, ladies and gentlemen. A battle rages between two men that can only be described as competition of the fittest. One man says, I'm better than you, and I'm going to prove it right here in front of all these people. Mano y mano is a Spanish construction meaning hand to hand. And that's a great way to describe what's going to happen between Patrick Peterson and the Lions' best receiver, Kenny Golladay. Golladay has been injured the last 2 weeks with a sore hammy and will make his 2020 debut at State Farm Stadium. Although the Lions' offense has looked out of sync, it is the strength of their team, and Kenny Golladay will be a huge boost for Matthew Stafford on Sunday. Golladay is huge. At 6'4 and 215 pounds, he's strong and uses his size to beat the press, run routes, and make plays. In last year's opener, Golladay caught 4 passes for 42 yards and a touchdown against the Cardinals. And Pat P was serving his suspension. And while those numbers sound like a huge win, keep in mind that tight end TJ Hockenson caught 6 passes for 131 yards and a touchdown. A harbinger of things to come in 2019, was it not, my brothers? As a third-round pick, Golladay has been prolific. After a pedestrian rookie season, Babytron, as he's known in the Motor City, exploded in a year. Exploded in year two, catching over 70 balls while eclipsing the 1,000-yard receiving mark. In 2019, Kenny had 65 receptions for over 1,100 yards and averaged 18.3 yards per catch. This dude is a deep threat. He scored 11 touchdowns last season. No other receiver scored more touchdowns in 2019 than Kenny Golladay. Patrick Peterson hasn't had that marquee matchup he's been waiting for in 2020. San Francisco played without Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. Terry McLaurin wasn't shadowed by Pat P, and the Cards did play some zone, but he did light up the Cardinals for 125 yards and a touchdown. And Pat P was over him a lot of that time. You all know where this is going. Enter shutdown man, Patrick Peterson. Hush, little Babytron. Don't say a word. And never mind that noise you heard, because that's the media asking questions. Is Pat P still a shutdown corner? What does it say if Pat P is not shadowing Kenny Golladay, or at least over him the vast majority of the time? Or more nefariously, what does it say about Pat P if Vance leaves him on the right side of the field, doesn't have him shadow Golladay? And the Lions, by formation, make sure their best receiver draws the best corner. that's ever put on a Cardinals uniform. What happens then? Tails! Nice! This is going to be really interesting to watch, is it not? Kenny Golladay, how many snaps can you expect from Kenny Golladay? I don't know what that number is coming off that hammy, but I would imagine he's got fresh legs. He's ready to go. He's prolific when he's out on the field. A guy that is so big and so strong and yet can run, gets down the field on deep routes. Very good at 50-50 balls himself. This guy, are you going to put Pat P over him? Because right now, if there's one guy that I would say, yeah, we're going to tag Patrick Peterson, we're going to shadow him, it'd be this game. This would be the game right here. And if they don't, do you read into that, Basin audience? I don't know what to say about it. I really don't. I'm just going to take a wait-and-see approach.
That's got to be the first time in Duncan Wolf history that you talked for 7.5 minutes and ended by saying, I don't know what to say about it.
It's par for the course, is it not?
Here's
but
Matthew
I don't know
Stafford.
What to say specifically about whether or not they're going to do that, match him up and have him shadow Kenny Golladay. Don't know.
Yeah, I mean, since day one, I mean, he's come in and just worked hard. And, you know, if you're trying to, you know, gain the trust of the quarterback or the guys in the locker room, that's the one thing to do is just go in there, work hard, be on your assignments. And then when you get your chances to make plays, go make them. And, you know, I try to throw the ball to where the ball needs to go on certain plays, not to certain people. You know, obviously when I've given him chances and like all of our guys have done a nice job making plays.
First of all, I love that quote for the average football fan just to hear it. I throw the football where it needs to go, not to a specific person, you know.
You know, I try to throw the ball to where the ball needs to go on certain plays, not to certain people.
I love that.
Kurt Warner.
But number two, it is clear that Stafford seems to have more confidence in Golladay than he does a lot of other receivers.
I think he's just another piece of our offense. You know, obviously he's a player that had a ton of production for us the last couple of years. He's a guy that can stretch the field. He's a big physical player, big catch radius, got good speed. You guys have watched Kenny play. You know what he's capable of doing. You know, I think the more weapons we can have out on the field, the better. We'll see if he's able to make it up for us this week or not, but obviously just having him back out of practice for a few was nice.
Yeah, no doubt, man. You look at his production over the last couple of seasons. As a third-round pick, Douglas, out of Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
Man, I'm telling you, it is so impressive what this kid has done and how prolific he's really been when it comes to that kind of production. I did not know this, Basinonians, but the fact that he led the National Football League for receivers in touchdowns last year at 11, that blew my mind. But that's who he is. He's a playmaker.
Two reasons why. Because it was him and because it was that low. You would have just assumed it was
right.
There would be more.
Exactly.
Coming up next. The D-backs are actually ending their season, and it's one of the more disappointing ones we can remember in years. Will heads roll, or is it kind of you want to justify it and say, you know what, let's try it again next year? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Got it!
It looks like she went to shake his hand, and he did not take it.
The president.
He's the president and CEO of your Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hail to the chief.
Derek Hall.
The president.
On Now with Doug and Wolf, presented by Cox Business.
Cox Business is here to help you get back to business. Visit coxbusiness.com for details.
Good morning, Mr. President. Thanks for calling in to the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. How are you?
Doug, good morning, Ron. Good morning. Doing
good morning.
Well. A little mini sweep. We haven't said that often this season. That was a fun little two-game series.
14 runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it's fun where it's coming from. It's all up and down the lineup, and, guys are just swinging the bats freely and manufacturing runs like we talked about last week. It's mm-hmm. been fun to see them produce offense the way that we drew it up to begin with.
So, Dee, it was really interesting. When we talked to Mike Hazen a couple of days ago, Mike was talking about the fact that he believes the talent is here and is looking forward to bringing the core group of players back. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I know they feel that way. I agree with them. We do have the talent. We have a lot of questions to answer. We know that as well. I mean, we can't forget, Wolf, that it was like reading a book that we never really enjoyed and several times thought about putting it down, right? And then right. just because the final chapter was pretty good, you don't want to walk away and go, yeah, the book wasn't bad. I'm going to recommend it. So, you know, we have to remember, if you look at the work of art in its entirety, something was wrong, and we've got to figure that out. But then again, you know, strange season, short season, glimpses of really good play, and I think we have a lot of positives to hang our hat on. But I don't think we can rest on our laurels or just assume that the exact bunch we have in place is the team to go out to battle with next year. And I don't think, you know, Mike feels that way either. He certainly, as I do, believes that we have a right. great deal of talent here, and we still have a number of players who we believe in that we can still build around.
You know, there's countless number of times through, you know, examples through sports history and general history where somebody, I'll just say it, had their head in their butt thinking everything was okay and it wasn't, and they went back out there with the same thing expecting different results. And there's countless number of times where somebody said, you know what, I'm not going to believe what I'm seeing right now, and they were proven right. That they stuck with how they felt when everybody else said, are you crazy? You've got to make changes. And they were proven right as well. Why are you passionately behind the ladder? What is it that you see from a lot of guys batting 200, having career lows and a starting rotation that didn't get it done that makes you say, no, it's just 2020?
Well, I think I'm passionately balanced, actually. I think that there's plenty of players on this team that I think either naturally regressed as we thought they could and will bounce back. I think there's a tremendous amount of talent on this team that we can still win with. But I also think that there's a number of changes that we can make. I also believe in the whole Wally Pipp theory too. And I think fortunately in a season like this where we were able to bring guys up and take them back down and allow the young guys to play. I mean, Doug, I have a lot of optimism for, you know, some of the talent that we saw. There were some great stories. When you look at some of the veterans, you know, Guerra's pitched great of late. We look at the starters. You know, Bum looks like he's come around. Gallen has been terrific all year. You know, I think when you think about Merrill Kelly and the season he started with prior to injury, he was fantastic. Caleb Smith has been a great acquisition. Luke Weaver is now stretched out and looking more like himself. That's great. And you win with, you know, you win with pitching. And then some of the young kids, Alex Young did it again yesterday, you know, kept us in a game. There's been times this year where Widener and Clark have looked really good. Some of the young relievers, Nella and Riley Smith, exciting. And then now looking around the infield and outfield, some of the guys that were able to play. I mean, Varsho has been, I can't wait to watch this kid grab the bat and get in the box every time, because you never know what's going to happen, but you know he's going to put together a great at bat. You know, Paven Smith has looked good. Josh Rojas, prior to getting injured, has looked really good. Van Meter, I'm excited about the future. It's obvious that the trades that we made brought in some talent and that we're starting to produce talent from below. So it's not as if you just stick with the major league roster that you started with. You've now got to figure out how to sprinkle in some of this talent and then look around and see what's available out there. But again, I do think, Doug, to answer your question, we have to answer what went wrong or what has gone mm-hmm. wrong the last couple of years. Even though we've had talent, we haven't won. And, you know, which way are we going to go here?
You know, Dee, it's been my experience that when you have a talented team and you play poorly, you're labeled as an underachieving team, of course. And I'm sure you would agree with that. But when you are labeled as an underachieving team because you are so talented, many times the staff gets blamed or the system gets blamed. Where do you place the blame?
I place the blame on the entire organization. I really do. I've said it all along, and that's a great question, Wolf, and you're right. Do I think we've underachieved? Absolutely. You know, we just went through these ruts where we couldn't score, we couldn't produce any offense, and we didn't have both sides click. We didn't really have our pitching at its best when we had our offense at its best. Very few games did we see that. So I can't blame, you know, I can't blame the coaches. They worked very hard. I can't blame the players individually. They've worked hard. They've wanted to win, and they certainly haven't given up. I'm really proud of the effort, as I know Tori is. I would never blame the general manager in this case or the manager. It's really all of us. It didn't work, and let's make sure that we address it and that we fix it. But seeing these guys bounce back and not just caving and giving up, I think we would all be much more frustrated if we had an underachieving team for the most part for the season, but then a team that gave up. And our team clearly never gave up. And when you look at some of these veterans and the leaders like Madison Bumgarner, who couldn't wait to get back out there and take the ball again and show that he's the pitcher that he's been, and he's looked really good the last couple of starts, and or at least the last start. And you look at, you know, some of our veterans like Ketel Marte, it's hard calling him a veteran, couldn't wait to get back from injury and from the wrist and get back out there, you know, yesterday. That's exciting to me, and it's a group of guys that are playing like Cole Calhoun now that just want to play and want to win and have fun out there. That's important, Wolf, as you know, too. So you can be an underachiever and you could also be a quitter. That's not what this team is. This team is still fighting. This team still wants to prove itself and win.
Talking to Derek Hall, president, CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, I really liked Nick Pecoro's question of the Arizona Republic about Eduardo Escobar's physical condition, and I love Torrey Lovello being so bluntly honest that, yeah, it's a concern and it was already addressed. One of the things that kind of concerned me, though, Derek, is do we have the leadership on this team of somebody else stepping up? It seems like we have a lot of really good guys who kind of feel like we're all on the same level. Like, you don't need me to lead you, and I don't need to be led. And I want to hear a story about somebody on the team telling Eduardo, you know, Goldie would have said something quietly, hey, that's not what we do here. He wouldn't have made a big deal about it, but he said, that's not what we do here. Do we have that guy that will stand up to other veterans to say, that's not what we do here?
Absolutely. Yeah, and there are stories of that. In the last couple of days, you heard Mike say that the last couple of days the veterans were addressed and the veterans spoke up. And it's ironic that we would talk about Escobar because he's one of those leaders. I mean, he is tremendous. And if you're a leader, you also have to be accountable, and he is. That's why, you know, that issue, as Tori suggested, was addressed, because Eduardo is accountable. He understands. He's honest. And I got to tell you, he's one of the greatest leaders I've seen on a team. He's not someone that anybody should ever be concerned about. And he's the type of guy that will speak up. Guys like Cole Calhoun, who will speak up, Nick Ahmed. We've got leaders on this team. That's not an issue. And I think we're becoming more of a veteran team just by makeup. And especially when you see so many young kids coming in. So what I've seen, Doug, is just the opposite. The last 2 weeks to a month, these young kids that are up have really been watching some of the veterans. And as we've started to win and play better, and they've been a part of that, that's a real positive. They're now following them. They're seeing how to lead. They're experiencing the wins, and they're seeing how to do it as an entire unit.
D, how much do you evaluate the front office in terms of the way it's structured and how it's populated with the people actually doing the jobs? I mean, when you look at your systems from a front office perspective, what do you see?
I think we're very efficient right now. We're constantly tweaking. I love that question because it's something that Mike and I talk about all the time. We're out there trying to acquire talent for the front office, even in a challenging time. We've all had to make changes. All 30 teams have had to let people go. That's good and bad. You know, we too have had to let some folks go, but if there's talent out there, you try and acquire them. I also think we've had, additions within our own system where there's an opportunity. You know, we love Mike Bell. He moves on to become a bench coach, and it opens up a spot as a farm director for a Josh Barfield, who is doing a terrific job. I really like the folks we have. I think our scouting is clicking. You know, it was a strange scouting year, as you know, Wolf. We couldn't really do anything internationally. I think, you know, with the limited amount of rounds in the amateur draft, we did a very nice job. Amiel does such a great job there. JP does such a terrific job with our professional scouts. I'm thrilled with the way that we're structured right now. Mike Fitzgerald, who you guys know and have heard about so much about, does such a great job when it comes to R&D and analytics, where I think that's one of our advantages. I like the way we're structured, and we're going to continuously tweak and try and find talent out there to add to it.
This is tough, but you mentioned it. You are entering into a year where you're probably going to have a top five pick, and it is almost impossible to scout the way that you want to. And there's a ton of great scouts that you could pick up a phone right now and call and hire them. That they're just, there's so much work to be done, and you're not going to get any credit for it. I know it's a tough sell, but as president and CEO, why not go to Ken Kendrick and say, let's spend on scouting when everybody else is not spending on scouting, because the workload is going to be tougher than it ever has been, even though no one's going to give you guys any credit if you spend a lot on scouting.
Love your thinking, and I feel like you've bugged our phones. You know, it's funny because some of the teams have had to have some severe cuts, and you have to decide and prioritize where and how. We've decided we are not going to, you know, really cut when it comes to scouting. And, you know, we've held on to our scouts as long as we could and as long as we can. So we've still got the core of our guys all together. For that reason, Mike and I had several philosophical conversations starting back in like May, where it looked like all of us were going to have to at least, you know, trim a little bit. And we thought, boy, we can't cut from there, because that's the lifeblood of who we are. And if we're going to claim as an organization that we need to, you know, scout properly and draft properly and develop from within and promote after those guys are developed, then we have to invest in scouting. So, you know, Ken has been 100% on board with whatever direction we want to go. He has been as supportive as could be, and he's been all ears. So we have we've stuck to that strategy. And like I said, Doug, it's almost as if you're in that room, you know, making that decision with us, because we agree with that. And that's the right move for this organization or organizations like us.
You know what, D? You might want to sweep your office, because, you know, Douglas would do that. Hey, thank you, buddy.
I was
going to
ask,
time.
Can I be in the room? Come on, let's go. You know I love that.
Thanks
stuff.
For your time, D. Appreciate
Thanks,
it
Derek.
As always,
Thank you, guys.
Brother.
I appreciate you. All right, have fun this weekend.
You
There's
too.
President CEO Derek Hall of the Arizona Diamondbacks joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Your family owns and operated dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Coming up next, the Lions are all singing the praises of one Arizona Cardinal. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Diamondbacks president and CEO Derek Hall on the Doug and Wolf Show, presented by Cox Business. Cox Business is here to help you get back to business. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.